there's certain texts that you sing all the time, either hymns or the Mass setting, or for Evensong, Magnificat and Nunc Dimittis, or an Ave Maria setting. But none of these texts are the kind of familiar in terms of being set to music before, which is, I think, is really exciting. They tend to be more towards the, I don't know if this is a teenager thing, but they tend to be more towards the kind of angsty, you know, brooding style texts.
Faith at the Fringe, a Sanctuary First podcast series. Uncovering God in the creative arts. At the biggest international arts festival in the world, Sanctuary First stops to ask, where does faith and art meet?
Hello and welcome to Faith at the Fringe here on Sanctuary First. For 2024, the Edinburgh Festival Fringe is in full swing. And so we are here back with our podcast to explore faith at the Fringe, to do what it says on the tin, with some wonderful contributors, performers, all who are involved in the Fringe and excited to see how faith can it be explored and how it might impact the Fringe and everybody who comes in. And everybody who comes in is all about our guests and our friends, whether that's to Edinburgh for the Festival Fringe or whether indeed it is here to the Faith at the Fringe podcast. So our friends today joining me alongside here are Peter Sutton. Wonderful to have you back with us, Peter, helping host some of these podcasts, and indeed in your church in St. Cuthbert's here, which is just super. And I really appreciate your hospitality in having us here. So thank you.
It's great to have you back.
Thank you. And we are joined by Callum Robertson today. Callum, thank you for coming on the very first Faith at the Fringe podcast 2024.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's lovely. Now, Callum, for everybody at home, Callum is involved with the Sacred Arts Music Festival, and you are one of the directors and the organisers of a very special event. It's the Young Composers Music Competition, and that's what we're going to find out a little bit more about today and really delve into your vision and your hopes for it, who's won it, the contributors, and whereabouts we find that crossover between faith and the arts community. So, Callum, why don't you tell us a little bit more, first off, about the competition, about where it came from, because it's the first year of the competition, but it's not the first year that you've been encouraging young composers, is it?
No, this is the second year that we've had a young composers event. I need to get this right. The Edinburgh Festival of Sacred Arts is what we're calling it now. And this festival has been running for several years. But last year, we decided we would have a young composers event, which was really successful, held in Canongate Kirk. And so because it was so successful, we wondered how we could expand on it. And so we decided to hold a competition and have this nationwide as well, and also to have it to open it up to composers aged 21 years and younger. And so we've had something between 12 and 15 compositions written with religious texts were submitted, and they were eventually sent to the Master of the King's Music, Dame Judith Weir, and she picked the top three, and as well as three other highly commended compositions. So we've got that happening next week, and very excited to be performing these new pieces.
That sounds really exciting. And when you put out the remit for the competition, would there be any specific guidelines regarding the faith or the spiritual component?
So it's a sacred text. So we did give anyone who was maybe not sure what music to, what text to set, we did give, I think, four or five texts that could be set. But if anyone wanted to set a different type of text, they could submit that and say, is this okay? And all of them were approved. And it's really interesting, particularly having younger people coming up, choosing their own texts and what they kind of go for compared to what, you know, someone you know, more experienced, as it were, would go for, or who maybe had a greater experience in the church. So it's been very interesting to see what they come up with.
And so, yeah. Did that give you a sort of like a sort of little sense of what the younger generation think is a sacred text, as opposed to what, you know, you initially thought they might have? So, were there any surprises?
Weren't any surprises in sense of kind of, ooh, I'm not sure about that, but there was certainly, there was a Christina Rossetti text. There was another one by, I think, James Macaulay, who's an Australian poet. They were, what was really good for me, because I've been a church musician for over 17 years, there's certain texts that you sing all the time, either hymns or the Mass setting, or for Evensong, the Magnificat and the Nunc Dimittis, or an Ave Maria setting. But none of these texts are the kind of familiar in terms of being set to music before, which is, I think, is really exciting. They tend to be more towards the, I don't know if this is a teenager thing, but they tend to be more towards the kind of angsty, you know, brooding style texts, instead of maybe the more celebratory kind of ones. But nevertheless, they are beautiful texts.
So they took the text that they were able to choose themselves, mm-hmm. and they composed pieces of music in and to those texts. And was there any guidelines as to the instruments that they used, or what was involved in the musicality?
So we gave them kind of a structure. So we said that it will be an octet performing, so two sopranos, two altos, two tenors, two basses. They could write it for unaccompanied choir, or it could be with piano, or it could be with organ. We kept it to that, just to kind of partly to encourage, once these pieces have been performed and composed, they would be accessible to be performed again by other choirs. So if you ended up having it for, say, a string quartet and choir, that makes it a bit more complicated to perform again. So we thought that would be the kind of ideal instrumentation. So unaccompanied piano or organ. Yeah.
Could I just take you back to what I found to be really fascinating, just what you said a moment ago, that people are reflecting an angst-ridden, you know, sense of what they want to express personally. Do you think that's drawing on a sense of angst elsewhere?
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, who knows? It's definitely, you know, seeing what's happening in the world. Yes, of course, you would. There's a very much a connection there. But I think people, I think we do like to read those kind of powerful, brooding, dark texts to kind of, I don't know, to explore that side of it. Sometimes the sheer just joyfulness text is maybe not so straightforward. Certainly when you're setting to music, it opens up a really a big world to kind of explore how to reflect that in the music, those darker texts.
And that's one of the key areas in music, isn't it, that allows that expression of the inner turmoil that so often is felt. And I wonder, you know, just, again, how significant it is that it's young adults who have been composing it at a time that's really crucial for identity formation, in addition to the pressures that we're experiencing just now in wider society, whether it be climate change that they are particularly affected by, or social media, which can have such a massive impact on mental health for young adults as well. It's really wonderful to see that opportunity that you've given them to express it through music. And I'm just wondering, you said that the first year you didn't have it as a competition, but then you decided to make it into a competition. And I'm just wondering, bringing these two strands together, that you've got here the opportunity to express that inner turmoil and the deepness of the soul in through music for young adults, and putting it into a competition. Do you think there was a bit of an impact there, or what were the thoughts that you were having as a committee around taking it into making it a competition?
When you create a competition, it can, like exams or anything like that, it kind of creates a focus and a kind of, you know, something to strive for. Whereas maybe having it as we'd like to have composition sent to us, I think that would have worked quite well as well. But I think having a competition just creates a bit more kind of a buzz about it. And particularly it's going to be in the festival, in the Fringe, in Canongate Kirk, Judith Weir is going to be there. I think it just all creates to the hype, which I think is great to celebrate.
So have you seen more young composers come forward and participate this year?
Well, so we've the winning composition is from a young composer in Aberdeen. The second prize went to a woman who is studying here in Edinburgh. Funnily enough, it's her first composition for choir. She'd never written for choir before, and she won second place for it. And she's apparently wanting to write more for choir now. I think she's a pianist and has written some compositions in that. But so I think that's great that she's kind of come into that world. And the third prize, I think, went to an organ scholar in St Andrews. So we've kind of got the length and breadth of Scotland, sort of. Yeah, nothing from Thurso or anything like that.
So it's fascinating. I know you'll be aware that BBC Radio 3 do their Christmas Carol competition. Mm. I think last year was the first year they did a young person's category as well. Mm-hmm. And I was just listening to it, and the music coming out from, you know, these young folk was just incredible at a level that was as equal, if not more, you could even say challenging, I think, than some of the more traditional ways people perhaps approach Christmas Carol.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look back in the past, Mozart was a child prodigy. He was writing his first symphony at the age of 5 or 6. And arguably some of the best music that Mendelssohn ever wrote was at the age of 16. So it's the potential is there. Absolutely.
You look biblically as well. I mean, the Psalms traditionally are seen as, you know, sharing the mood, you know, of a people. And often they go from a period of, you know, lament, ultimately arriving, hopefully, at a sense of hope and joy. Many of them said to have been written by young David as well, whether or not that historically holds together. But certainly, as far as sharing the mood of a people, are you able to say that ultimately these entries left you with a sense of hope, not necessarily joy, but would you be able to get to hope on an angst-ridden piece?
Yeah, well, that's what's great about music is that you don't need to use words to describe something. That's what music is so great about, because it's one of the great liberal arts, and all the great thinkers throughout the entire history of the human race have put the importance of music right at the forefront. It describes something that you can't put into words, even though if it's setting text as well. It's very, yeah.
So just picking up then on that importance of music, what kind of messages in terms of whether it's scripture or to do with other part, you know, with our faith, with the Christian faith, do you see, what role do you see, one, with faith in music, but also music and faith as you're looking at this younger generation, which this competition is all focused on. It's amazing. I love that it's reaching out to the young adults and really pulling them in and giving them that opportunity and platform. So I'm just wondering then, what do you see as the role of music and faith in music in this context?
So I don't know the personal circumstances of the entrants, whether they are Christians or whether they have a faith or not. But I think what's most importantly is that they've reacted to these texts, these sacred texts, and they are able to express a kind of, well, I would say a love for the human race, love for community, society, and that's what's very important with music, I think. So certainly from my point of view, I didn't grow up going to church every week, but then I started coming to church to play the organ, and I came into this amazing community, and I loved it ever since. And that might be the case with these people. They may not have written sacred texts before, set sacred texts before, but they might now come into this incredible world where there's so much. I mean, some of the earliest manuscripts we have of music is church music, plain song and things. So it's very important, I think, that they are certainly aware of it. And if they come into this world, that's fantastic to experience all this wealth of music.
And would you say that that's part of the heartbeat of the competition?
It's celebrating sacred music and that side of things. It's also celebrating music in general as well. So it's, I'm not sure if that entire mission is to kind of bring people together in faith in that sense, but it's certainly opening that avenue up to people, I think.
And have the prize winners been announced?
They have been announced, yeah, okay, yes.
And how did you do that?
Was it? There was a press release done in middle of July. And so, yes.
Is it one of these ones where you have to phone up the winner?
So the winners were obviously notified before the press release happened. So they didn't have to read about it on the 9 o'clock news. Right. No, so it's been announced. So the winning composition went to the Aberdeen composer Jonathan Love, who set this text, An Art of Poetry. It's a beautiful text by Australian poet James Macaulay. And the second prize was to the woman who's based in Edinburgh, Zoe Watkins. And the third prize was to the St Andrews organ scholar, Michael Chamberlain, I believe.
Just thinking, Ruth, we've got, we're talking about poetry this afternoon, so it'll be interesting to see if, is it Alistair Macaulay from
Australia?
James Macaulay features in this afternoon's podcast as well. And what was the poem?
It's called An Art of Poetry.
Wow, beautiful.
And so if we want to come and see the competition in terms of the results and just enjoy these musical pieces, how do we come and hear them? Where can we do that?
So the performance will happen on Thursday, the 15th of August at 1:15 at Canongate Kirk. And it will be really special because it's an amazing church. It's such a historical church as well for many reasons. And Dame Judith Weir will be there to announce the winners and to talk a wee bit about compositions and her music as well. So we're going to perform two of her works as well. And yes, there'll be a professional choir of 8 singers, myself conducting them. And yes, you'll hear 3 winning prizes and the 3 commended performances as well.
And is that a ticketed event?
It's a ticketed event, yes. Yeah. I can't remember exactly how much it is. It would be great to, I think it will be a very busy event. So I hopefully it will be a full house.
And apart from this fantastic event that you've got on the 15th, is that right? The 15th of August?
15th of August, yeah.
So apart from that, what are your hopes and visions, you know, going forward from this competition, both equally for the Festival of Sacred Arts Music?
Edinburgh Festival
right?
of Sacred Arts. Yeah. I still have to think about it.
So in terms of your vision for things going forward with the pieces of music, but also with the young composers and the young adults, and again, wider with that wider festival as well. What are your hopes with that?
So on the morning of the concert, the composers will come to the final rehearsal. So it'll be great to meet them and have a chat about their music and, you know, get to know them and see what they have to say about it. We didn't do a competition last year. We did one this year. So I think once this event happens, we'll have a meeting to discuss the entire festival and really decide what we might do the next year. So it might be another competition. It might be something different. Sometimes it just needs someone just to drop in another thought, and then something else comes from that. In terms of the new pieces, we are hoping to have copies of the new works available for people to buy, because I think that's really important. It's all very well to perform a new piece of music, but after that, what happens? So certainly last year, I've certainly performed 2 or 3 of the pieces that we had last year again, and I know they've been performed by other choirs as well. So I think that's really important to get that music out there, because it's so difficult these days.
Is it? Do you find it quite hard?
Well, there's just so much. There's so much creativity going around. And so to really expose these compositions to the wider community, it can be difficult. So it's, you know, getting recordings. We are going to record the concert, which is fantastic. So that can hopefully, I don't know, YouTube or something like that, we made available. And we'll do what we can to promote these composers as well going forward.
So you're going to be sharing that, and people are going to be able to buy it, the pieces of music going forward as well. Is that just the 3 winning pieces?
I think probably the commended compositions as well. So 6 of them, yeah.
And would you hope then that churches might pick that up, that music up? And, you know, like, for example, Peter, yourself at St Cuthbert's with the choir and your just wonderful heart for music here. Is that sort of your hope that maybe that could happen too, that churches would pick it up and it become part?
Yeah, well, certainly these ones are all pretty accessible to, a choir that maybe doesn't tackle huge works. And, you know, it's in, some of them are in four parts. There's quite a lot of unison writing as well. So I think there's a lot of scope for choirs to take on these works and perform them in services or in concerts. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. And then I suppose the flip side of that I'm then wondering about is you said that it's difficult and it's challenging for young composers and for composers to bring forth new music. And that's, we've talked there just about the church setting. What about outside of the church setting as well? You know, I'm aware that there are some new musical pieces that have slight words changed and altered and that are released mainstream into the music sphere. Do you also hope that actually you'll be able to bring these pieces into not just a religious setting, but that we might even hear in shops or, you know, or in Spotify with different streams? Or
you never know. It's sheer luck, you know, right place, right time. You know, you never know. There could be next Thursday someone who hears one of the pieces and wants to record it, and it suddenly blossoms into, you know, goes on to Classic FM or something like that. You never know what's going to happen, and that's exciting. Certainly, I take another choir, which is not a church choir, the Edinburgh University Singers, and we have performed two of the works from last year. So, I'm already looking at a couple of them this year and thinking, yeah, that would fit well into one of our concerts. So, and hopefully that will be taken on by other choirs as well, not necessarily church choirs, but just, yeah.
And it sounds like the whole Sacred Arts Festival, I mean, this is obviously grounding it in this competition, which is wonderful, but there's lots of other things going on as well. And are you just involved within the musical side of it yourself, or do you have any input on other things?
I'm taking care of this concert and another one, which is happening on the Saturday, Thursday, 15th, 16th, on the 17th, in St. Vincent's, which is a very interesting concert celebrating the 400th anniversary of the death of a calligrapher and poet and writer, Esther Ingalls. And she was born in France, but she was a French refugee, came to Scotland. And so we're going to be showing, there's actually a little exhibition of her stuff up at the National Library of Scotland, which has also got an exhibition in that same one about Scottish music. So you can see incredible manuscripts of early Scottish music from churches and things. So I do recommend that, anyone, free exhibition up at the National
Library. Arts Fest,
it's not Arts Sacred Festival. No, it's not actually. It's tied in really nicely with the concert we're going to do to celebrate Esther Ingalls. So we're going to sing a lot of French polyphony that is from when she was around, and some early Scottish metrical psalms as well as a piece for soprano and clarinet, which I'll be playing clarinet, by a composer called Sheena Phillips. And she set three little prayers, psalms by Esther Ingalls, and Petit Sautier is called.
Oh, gorgeous. When's that again?
That's Saturday the 17th of August at 12:30, I think.
Oh, wonderful.
Anyway, it's all part of the Sacred Arts Festival. Fantastic. But there's other things that, and that's what's amazing. We've got all these incredible buildings, churches in Edinburgh, and so that's the Sacred Arts Festival is in many of those. Canongate.
We're hosting one here. A tour as well.
The tour. Is that between St. John's and...
Looking at the two neighbours.
There's also up at the Lauriston Place, the Sacred Church of the Sacred Heart, and... Old St. Paul's as well, the church that I'm at, and at the cathedral as well. So, both cathedrals, I think, certainly the Met.
It's one of the amazing things about the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, isn't it? That it just opens up the platforms, the opportunities for so many kind of different performances, different contributors, artists, musicians. And it really, for me, it brings in a lot of what is at the fringes, and it makes it front and center, so that it is actually, it's valuing and honoring what this artistic creative skills and abilities and just wonders, to be honest, that really contribute towards shaping society. And that's one of the reasons I really love this young composers competition that you have, and also the wider part of the Sacred Arts Festival as well, because it is showing how faith is involved in shaping society in a way that's maybe not quite as obvious as we might first of all think? And I don't know about you, what do you think? That I think it is important that we, as people of faith, that we continue to have that kind of input, that we continue to have that role in bringing the love and the compassion and the mercy and the tender and kindness and the inspiration and the hope and the joy. You know, we've talked about that into society, because, you know, we've touched on it already today, saying about how not just young adults, but in particular young adults, have that inner turmoil. And surely it's a good thing for people of faith to then bring that message of hope. And of course, it's not just people of faith that are bringing messages of hope. I understand and recognize that. But I do think that it is important that people of faith continue to bring that message of hope in life.
It's beautifully encapsulated within, you know, the concept of the Sacred Arts Festival. I think there's a sense of the sacred to be found in all walks of life, and music can facilitate that. Coming into a sacred space can facilitate that. And it's just so lovely that within this huge festival going on in Edinburgh, we're actually, you know, just identifying the sense, or promoting that word sacred, I think, is very important as well. And just letting people find that sacred moment, sacred space.
We talk about mindfulness these days, and I think the church has been doing mindfulness ever since it was founded.
And well-being.
And the church should promote that as much as possible. How many spaces can you get in modern society where you can walk into an amazing space with beautiful architecture, where it's quiet and be still? And if you have a faith or not, it doesn't matter in that respect, but you can find something peaceful. And I think that should be promoted as much as possible. That's what churches have, certainly during the week. Not so easy during the festival when you hear everything else.
This could be the hope and survival of the Church of Scotland if we go down this route. Certainly, you know, there's a lot of the buildings are being sadly disposed of. But as you say, if there is a sacred space nearby, maybe it just needs promoting in a slightly different way.
Yeah. We've got a visitor's book at Old St. Paul's, and it's really nice to look through that and people's comments. And people have said, thank you for having this space open in the city centre, where it's a still place. And we've got, you know, an artwork by Alison Watt hanging in the Memorial Chapel called Still. And it's just this beautiful piece of cloth, painted cloth on canvas. And it encapsulates that still.
There's a lovely verse in the Psalms about being still as well in God's presence. And that really sums up a lot of what we're talking about just now, isn't it? Having that, maybe it's part of the longing. You know, we're talking about that inner turmoil. Maybe actually there is a bit of an inner turmoil for us about that longing for that space of sanctuary, that space and place to be still. And certainly we would hope that these podcasts actually can go some way to, in amongst all the festivities and the noise and the colour and the vibrancy of the Festival Fringe, that actually there is this space in these podcasts to, in some sense, come and be still and think about, is God in the arts? And yes, of course, for me, well, that is pretty obvious. You know, absolutely, 100%. And also to be comfortable in the space of people of faith and no faith, but to be comfortable in a sacred space and knowing that it's a safe place to come and be as well. There's lots of hopes with it all. And I think that's really encouraging and inspirational. And that is in part what I've heard from you, Callum, has been about the hopes and the dreams in terms of how the young composers might impact and how they might bring some kind of legacy from what they're doing, to bring out from what's in them, so that there is a continuation going forward. And I think that's, for me, a really good takeaway from our conversation today. Peter, just, you know, thinking back on everything we've covered, because we've covered so much in this conversation, what point are you taking away?
Well, for me, at first, it's just lovely having these podcasts back in St. Cuthbert's, and I can't think of how we could have got off to a better start, Ruth, than this discussion with Callum, because I found it very uplifting. And I found it uplifting because on the one hand, it's a very realistic conversation, and it's not shied away from some of the issues, you know, that are facing the churches or people of faith, however you want to describe it. But for me, there is a great underlying sense of hope and also doing things in a different way. That, for me, is what's come out of this. Not just that little discussion at the end about how maybe we use our spaces differently, but very much, Callum, from how you've really launched this competition to get people to think differently, and but also making it so accessible to, you know, a new generation. Because if we don't listen to a new generation, we're really going to be at a loss, I think. And this, for me, is very exciting. So thank you.
What was really special last year, and if it's going to be anything like last year, it will be just as special, if not more, was one of the five-star review we got. The critic said, the reviewer said, that you felt like you'd witnessed something very special at the Fringe. So I think we'll hopefully get that next week as well. I'm sure we will.
Yeah, I am absolutely, definitely sure you will. I mean, if you carry just even a little bit of what is in the atmosphere of that competition, I think people are going to be blown away with it, because what you've shared with us today has been inspiring and deep and thought-provoking and challenging and hopeful. And really, really thank you so much for coming on and exploring that whole concept of faith at the fringe and in the competition that you've been hosting, and also about trusting the young adults. Trusting them to bring out and bring forth something that is something spectacular. So I do hope, and we hope, that you have a spectacular evening on the 15th. And friends, if you would like to support and maybe go along and still see their ticket.
Do not in the evening.
1:15 on the 15th of August.
At the Canongate Kirk, yeah.
At the Canongate Kirk, then please do go, and we'll pop up the links as well so that everybody can see the information there. And thereafter, look out for these wonderful new pieces of music that have been composed and will be being shared wide and far. And speaking of being shared wide and far, if you have enjoyed our Faith at the Fringe podcast today with Callum Robertson, please share it far and wide. We are on our usual places of the app and our website, our socials, on Spotify, on YouTube, and you can share it with a simple click and let everybody hear just the great inspiration that we have heard from Callum today. So thank you, Peter.
My pleasure.
And thank you again, Callum.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for joining us here on our very first episode of Faith at the Fringe 2024.